Welcome to College Football Country, the podcast. I'm Josh Parcell, founder of CFBCountry.com. Very excited to have you guys joining me today for my third full episode of the College Football Country podcast. You guys are tremendous. I love you all so much for listening. You helped jump College Football Country to the top of the charts last week, the number one college sports podcast on iTunes. That was tremendous. Keep rating and reviewing the show. It's the best way for you guys to help me. I want to have the best, most entertaining, most authentic, smartest conversations in college football all season long. I love that you guys have had such positive feedback so far. If you want to keep that going, please rate and review the show. Share it with your friends. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. All those good things. Spread the word. That's the best way to help me out so I can keep giving you guys the content that you guys need. My goal is to be the best podcast in college football this season, and I need your guys' help. So thank you for listening. I have a little contest for you. I'll get to that in 1 second. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about our guest today. Bruce Feldman, senior college football writer for Sports Illustrated, also sideline reporter for Fox Sports One, and he is one of my mentors in the business. And I just want to tell a very quick story about Bruce Feldman. If you don't know anything about him, this guy is the nicest guy on the face of the earth. It's unbelievable how nice this guy is. When I was a sophomore in college, I'm in a reporting class at Virginia Tech. We have an assignment that says, go interview somebody in your field, any reporter, any journalist, somebody that you can do some sort of Q&A, learn a little bit about what they do, report back. Well, most people say, all right, I'm going to go get the weatherman or the local beat writer for the newspaper or somebody that was super accessible with just a phone call away, just a short drive away, who knows. I decided to shoot for the moon. I went for Bruce Feldman. At the time, he was at ESPN. He was ESPN Insider's college football writer. I said, what the hell? If he gets back to me, great. I never thought he would, but you got to shoot your shot. And I said, okay. I emailed him, figured I'd never hear back. 3 or 4 hours later, he emails me back. So I'm already, my mind is blown. And we set up a time to talk. I told him 15, 20 minutes. I said, I just need to ask you a couple questions about how you got in the business, what it's like now, you know, all the generic BS. And we talk on the phone for 15, 20 minutes. And the next thing you know, 20 minutes turned into an hour and a half with this guy. And not only did I get everything I needed for my Q&A, we talked about literally everything in college football. We talked about running backs coaches at LSU, for God's sakes. I mean, we were going so far inside the baseball with this conversation. It blew my mind that me, a 19-year-old kid, is talking to arguably the most well-known college football writer in the country. And this guy's just sitting there talking to me for an hour and a half. Didn't bother him at all. So he's an extremely nice guy. I knew that when I started this podcast, I wanted to have him on the show. He is now at Sports Illustrated. Like I said, he still does sideline for Fox Sports One. He does a lot of great work, and I'm so happy that he's landed at Sports Illustrated. For those of you who don't know, he was part of the layoffs at Fox Sports over the summer when they cut their entire writing staff. He is as good as it gets in this business, and if you're a college football fan, you're going to love the conversation. He goes in depth on so many topics. The first thing we talk about is Josh Rosen, the quarterback at UCLA, whose comments last week made headlines, some of it not for the right reasons, and we dissect why he made those comments and the type of person that he is and whether or not it's good for college football. I have a lot of thoughts. If you're unfamiliar, Josh Rosen said, football and school don't go together. It's hard to basically play football at a Division I level and also get the full college experience on the academic side. In a lot of ways, he's right. But I wanted to talk to Bruce Feldman because if you don't know, Bruce Feldman wrote the book on Josh Rosen, the quarterback book that Bruce Feldman wrote two, three years ago called The QB, is one of the best reads you can find for any football fan, college, high school, pro, anything. It's a tremendous book. A lot of great stories on guys like Johnny Manziel, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Rosen, other big college stars. I knew he'd be perfect to talk about Rosen. The timing couldn't have been better. Bruce Feldman is my first guest on this show. And after you guys listen to that conversation specifically, here is my contest for you. You guys have been tremendous at rating and reviewing the show. It's been awesome. I want to know what your hottest Josh Rosen take is. It can be anything. Just give me the fire. Hottest Josh Rosen take you have in you. Leave a review on the podcast. Best review, hottest take, will win a free College Football Country koozie. I know. we're rolling out the big guns here. I'm giving you guys the best possible prize, a college football country koozie. You can show it off to all your friends. You're probably going to get laid. You're welcome. Just leave a fire Josh Rosen take, and you will be the winner of that koozie. So thank you guys very much for listening. Without further ado, let's get to our guest on the third full episode of the College Football Country Podcast, Bruce Feldman.
And now we welcome on Bruce Feldman, college football writer, analyst for Sports Illustrated, sideline reporter for Fox Sports One, and a guy who I've known for a long time. Bruce, right before I welcomed you on, I told the story about, you probably don't even remember, but 6 or 7 years ago, I was a sophomore in college working on a school project. I decided to email you out of the blue, thought I'd talk to you for a little while, and lo and behold, you came back to me, and we talked for about an hour and a half that very first time. It was one of the coolest experiences, certainly of my young career. I don't know if you remember that, but that was very memorable for me.
You know, I tried to respond, especially back when I was in the ESPN days, to pretty much anybody who would reach out, because, and I think I had told you this, you know, later on, where just I worked partly for it, you know, in ESPN Insider, where you're behind the paywall, and you feel like they're your customers, and you, it's all about customer service, and also I felt very grateful that I had a job and didn't feel like a job, you know. So the downside now on this is twofold. One, if I get asked about advice at this point from college, I honestly don't know what to say to them, just because, you know, the industry has changed and it's become so fractured, really, in that it's harder to really know the landscape. You know, I mean, things I could tell people would be, you know, develop your relationships and build good relationships and treat people well, and, you know, that kind of stuff goes hand in hand. The other part of it is just, I think because of social media, it's just hard to keep up with what's on your timeline. It's also, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I'm not able to get to now. I feel like I have way less time now that I'm no longer single. I think when you reached out to me, I was like, I had no family, so I was, you know, if it wasn't at the bar, I was pretty much accessible.
All right, well, I'm sure you're tired of talking about yourself, so we'll move on and talk some college football here. That's why we have you on. First thing I want to talk about is Josh Rosen, and he's obviously been in the news this week. The quote that everybody is talking about is where he said that trying to do football and school is like trying to do two full-time jobs. Football and school don't go together. And you literally wrote the book on Rosen in a way. I mean, your QB book several years ago, you wrote in detail about Josh Rosen at a very young age. So before we get into those comments specifically, just kind of give us your background on when you met Rosen and what your initial impressions were of him at that time.
The first time I met him, I heard a lot about this quarterback class that was coming up. It was the best California quarterback class in years, maybe generations, and he was one of the guys. Ricky Town was actually the guy who was getting the most hype at the time. Sam Darnold was also in the class, but he was not getting any hype at that point. Blake Barnett was getting a lot of hype. He was at Alabama, now ASU. But the first time I saw Rosen was at an Elite 11 event, and he was not able to work out because he was coming off an injury. And I talked to him for a little bit there, and you could tell he was very, very bright. I mean, he just, he thought about what he wanted to say, and then he just would say it. Where a lot of times, sometimes the kid you're talking to, especially then, you know, it's like the kid is 16 or 17 years old, they're telling you what they think you want to hear, or what they think they're supposed to say, or how they're supposed to sound when they're getting interviewed, kind of thing. Because they practiced it when they were 10 years old. He was different. And the next time I saw him was at an event to get into the Elite 11. It was also in Southern California, and all those same quarterbacks were there. And he was by far the best kid. I mean, you'd watch his throw and watched how he moved, and it was like no wasted motion. And his talent just jumped out at you. I mean, when you talked to the other coaches there, they were just raved about him physically and the tools he had. And, you know, they talked to college coaches who'd seen him, and they were, a lot of them were blown away, just because if you're looking for what a pro quarterback should look like, one of the coaches of the Elite 11 told me this. He said, I kind of imagine this is what Troy Aikman might have looked like when he was in high school. I'm guessing he's probably more polished at that point. But so that was my first, you know, kind of dealings with not surprised that he has been polarizing either, because he has, I don't know if he has no filter, but he speaks his mind. And sometimes, a lot of times, I don't think he really cares if that's going to come across as something that doesn't sound quite right to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, one of the passages in your book, I'm just going to read this quote because it strikes right to the point of how unfiltered he is. He said to you that basically, why would I go to another sport when he's talking about quitting tennis at a younger age? He said, why would I go to another sport that deep down I also don't like, being football? Maybe I'm not thrilled to go to practice every day, but I love the sport of football. I love winning. I love putting massive, obnoxiously large state rings on my finger. So for a kid who's, what, 15, 16, 17 years old to say that before he's even set foot on the college campus, it speaks to just his confidence, borderline arrogance, the brashness that he always has. He's not afraid to speak his mind. Do you think that he articulated the point that he was trying to make? Because there was this immediate reaction where we pulled the quotes, the, you know, football and school don't go together, the Alabama quote as well, and then we realized what he really was trying to say. But do you think that he articulated it in a way that was probably how he intended?
I think if he had a PR person, you know, working with him, it would have been softened, and it would have been probably a little more contextualized. So it would have been, you know, you can still pull out, you know, in this day and age of social media, whatever you want, and make a tweet or make a aggregation story about it. But I think that, you know, he talked to a lot of guys who have been through it at a high level, and I think it's, you know, it's a polarizing subject. I think, you know, what he's trying to say, or what it sounds like he was getting at, was it's really, really hard and damn near impossible for a lot of college football players to get everything out of a college education. I mean, most, you know, and I think this is just from looking at it on social media, and this is not a 140 character kind of comment. And I was like thinking of responding, like, had 40 written a column that I was about, like, that I was in largely in agreement with, and I was about to comment off of it, and just 140 characters is hard and easy for people to just take a morsel out of it and make their own point. What I think about it is, though, you know, I had two jobs in college, and I didn't go to college, like, but I was there for the college part, you know, and, you know, there are people who I know who have worked around jobs or around family situations, especially if they're a parent and, you know, and deal with a young kid. But I think, you know, where he's coming from is the requirements involved in football. It really is a full-time job, and it's physically and emotionally demanding. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It's you know, very, very slim. The people who can do it at a high level and thrive in both ways. I mean, I can think of when I was, you know, working on a meat market, there were players who couldn't take certain classes because it conflicted with the practice schedule every week. And it's like, okay, I remember one kid, he basically, you know, wasn't going to be a factor of his team because he had a lab that he had to fake, and I think it was a Tuesday, Thursday in the afternoon. Well, if you can't practice 2 days a week and one of them's a Tuesday, you're probably not going to, you're basically telling the coaching staff, hey, I know I'm on scholarship, but here's my reality. I mean, and related to the, you know, moreover on that, there was a really, really good player who ended up having a, you know, a strong NFL career at a school that is a high academic college. And I remember I got to know him pretty well because I'd done a feature on the ESPN magazine and we're at the photo shoot. And he was asking about my job, and we were talking about this a lot. And, you know, that school has a strong communications program. I said, did you, you know, how come you didn't pursue it? He goes, I wanted to, but they steered me into sociology. They were like, that's a really tough major. You know, most football players are better served if you go into sociology major because you may be underwater at that point if you're trying to do that other major. And that, he's not the first person who's told me that version. He was the one who, like, probably went into the most detail about it. But I think at one point, I had talked to a bunch of people when I was at the magazine about it. And there were quite a few guys who were like, yeah, they steered me into this major. And so when you use that context with what Rosen's saying, I think there's a lot of credence to it. I just think there is, you know, there's a lot of people who put their own situations and say, well, I worked two jobs and did this and I didn't, you know, or before, it also adds into the same part of the argument when people are going, well, I would have paid it, given anything, these guys are on scholarships and they're getting this, this, and this. There's some truth to some of these things, but I think I don't think it's a bad thing to have a discussion point, but what I hate about what happens with this social media is everything ends up into an argument, and nobody wants to hear any other side. They just think this person's a jerk, or this person's entitled, or this person's clueless, or whatever, and they don't know their own reality, and I will say this, when I was working on Read Market, I saw a ton of transcripts of kids, not just kids at Ole Miss, but a lot of kids, and the academics kind of really stunned me how poor they were with a lot of kids, and I think that's a reflection of not just more than the kids. I think it's a reflection of the school systems and some of the education that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. It was pretty bleak, and I'm not saying that was the way that that Alabama is per se. I think that's a lot of schools that are in the top 25. But I think it's also a lot of schools that are in the top 25 where you can see that the education around the state is really struggling, and that's an issue. And I don't know, that's not getting changed by whatever one quarterback in the Pac-12 says. I think that's just a reality that a lot of people are kind of facing.
Right. I mean, it's obviously a complex subject, and there's never going to be a way to please everybody, but for me, when I hear what Rosen says, there's a give and take, right? I mean, you're privileged enough to be on scholarship to be at a four-year university like a UCLA or like an Ole Miss or an Alabama or whatever it is. If you're a Division I player, you're going to have to make sacrifices at some point down the line. And like you said, guys like you and I mean, when I was in college, I was working a job that paid for my tuition. I paid for my fraternity dues, anything I wanted to do socially. I was working a job to make money. Then I was also working jobs to try and further my career, jobs that may not have paid me, but were jobs that were with a newspaper, with a local radio station, whatever it may be, just to try and set myself up for success after I graduated. So I had to make sacrifices along the line. I wasn't a Division I football player, but I certainly felt like I was using every last minute of my time. I was still able to have fun and enjoy some of the social aspects of college from time to time, but a lot of that time I was making sacrifices. And to me, while I think you hit on just about every point that gives credence to what Josh Rosen said, it does make it more difficult for me to take something coming from Rosen specifically, talking about not being able to mix football and academics when you're posting pictures of yourself in a hot tub with girls and stuff. It's just the perception, and I'm not saying that you can't have that as well, but guys make sacrifices, and I know there's people on both sides of the spectrum. I mean, Joshua Dobbs last year was in rocket science major. And a guy who had extremely high academics and played quarterback at one of the most pressure-packed schools in the country. So there are guys who have obviously proven capable of doing it. Not everybody is Josh Dobbs. I understand that. But at the same time, there are guys at Alabama or Virginia Tech or UCLA who probably wouldn't have gotten into a college at all, like you said, guys whose transcripts you looked at. And maybe they weren't able to focus on the major that they would prefer, but at the same time, in a lot of cases, football is opening doors up for guys, even if they don't get the full college, quote-unquote, academic college experience that we think that they should. They're still getting a college experience, something that they wouldn't have gotten before. So I think Rosen was right on a lot of what he said, but I find it, he wasn't necessarily, I think, the best person to be giving that message. Not to say that it isn't true.
Yeah, I think sometimes, and this is a larger point about, how what a person's background is, it makes them a stronger person to make a case, than somebody else. Let's say, Pat Tillman is obviously a great player at ASU and the Cardinals, and, he has basically carte blanche for whatever, because of the sacrifice and what he did, and how dare anybody question, where he's coming from. Whereas if you mentioned there was a player, who he could be from the same school or whatever, it doesn't have to be, who had a history of off-field issues or domestic violence or God knows what, people are less inclined too. They're quicker to dismiss that. Doesn't mean that they all are going to do it. But I think when you get, in Rosen's case, I mean, he is a really good student. Obviously, I think he would have gotten into UCLA without football. I think the part of the thing that gets lost in the translation is, I think he's really speaking for a lot of guys who are his teammates,
right?
And trying to show he has their back, as opposed to trying to necessarily complain about the system. I mean, I think there's been specific examples, including I remember being around him, and he brought this up maybe last spring. Was I think he feels like he's speaking out because these are things where these are issues that affect people he's close to or some of his teammates, as opposed to I don't think they really affect him as much. I mean, I think he's Nav Gavin. He's one of the rare people who can pull it off at a real high academic school, taking a challenging major, playing a position that's obviously very mentally demanding. I just think it's like one of these things where it falls into the gutter of social media, where it's just like people are pulling it apart, and you start losing the message.
Last question I want to ask you about Rosen. You've been around him more than most, especially from a younger age. And going back to that quote that I read earlier where it sticks out to me. Maybe I'm not thrilled to go to practice every day, but I love the sport of football. Do you think, in your honest opinion, what do you think he loves more, football or attention? Because he's obviously had some very outlandish quotes, starting from when he was in high school, last year with Sports Illustrated, the Trump hats on Instagram. I mean, he has done so many things for attention. He's not Johnny Manziel. He's not getting in trouble. But do you think he values the actual football, playing the sport, practicing the sport, getting better, or do you think he loves the attention more?
I think he actually loves the challenge of football on the competitive side. I mean, because I have seen people throw out the Manziel comparison before, and I was like, this is either people don't remember what some of the stuff Johnny was into, or they just have no idea what's going on out here. Like, Johnny had some major off-field issues.
Right.
They were on a whole different level.
Yeah, not the same as Rosen at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, like, I don't even know, I can't think of a successful college athlete who was on the Johnny level when it came to what was going on socially, what he was into, some of these other things. I mean, they're just a completely different landscape. For the attention part, I think it's, you have a guy who is a very big name and early on, I think he's still learning how to handle it. There's definitely been athletes I can think of who are, not bad guys, but I think they were, same age, who I think loved the spotlight even more. I just think that it's, you're still dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and, I think we'd be lying if a lot of us didn't admit that we kind of like that, too. It's just, I think right now, what you're talking about is a guy who, let's be honest, I mean, he's had some individual success, but he's played basically a season and a half. And I think that he still has a lot to prove.
It's going to be interesting to see how he does this season, because he came into UCLA with a ton of hype and he's yet to quite live up to that, but we've heard a lot more off the field maybe than on the field from Rosen so far. I want to move on really quickly, hit on a couple other stories. One that caught my attention this past week was down at Alabama, Cooper Bateman and Blake Barnett speaking out after leaving Alabama. Bateman moving on to Utah, Blake Barnett at Arizona State, former quarterbacks, losing that job to Jalen Hurts last year. And both in some form or fashion basically said that they thought that they were going to have a chance to be the starter at Alabama. In Blake Barnett's case, he was in the season opener last year against USC. He said that Nick Saban, according to him, Barnett was the guy. And then by the middle of the second quarter, that was over with, and Jalen Hurts had pretty much taken the job. I wonder, in your mind, you're around these quarterbacks a lot, these elite quarterbacks in high school, as they go through the Elite 11 circuit and they go through all the All-American games. Is it just a I guess it's a different animal with quarterbacks in terms of these big-time schools are going to recruit as many of these guys as they can. I mean, Ohio State has done it the last few years. I mean, USC brought in Ricky Town and Sam Darnold at the same time. Tons of schools are bringing in multiple high-level quarterbacks. You're going to lose these guys. I mean, these coaches have no choice but to try and oversell them maybe on what their role is going to be when they get to school. I mean, this isn't just an Alabama problem.
No, I don't think it is. It's certainly not. And the reason why I got so much attention is because Nick Saban is the greatest coach in college football history. You know, if this happened where if we were talking about Gary Patterson or Mike Gundy or Mark D'Antonio, it's not making, you and I aren't talking about, it's not making the Twitterverse. You know, and actually, these are two of three. You know, there's a third one, David Cornwell, who's yeah, maybe the starter in Nevada, was also a, you know, former touted Alabama quarterback recruit who was there for a couple of years, and he left too. So, I think it goes into your question a little bit, is these guys, you can only really play one. I think they are such spotlight guys, and maybe not by their nature, but just, you know, unless you're a diehard fan, like I could probably ask you, and you could come up with four-star guys that Vatek signed and probably didn't pan out. I don't know if I can remember them unless I heard their name thrown out. But when it comes to quarterbacks, if you're somewhat of a college football fan, you know who those guys are. You don't have to be a fan of that particular fan base. And in regards to Blake, you know, he was another kid I followed in the QB. He at one point committed to Notre Dame, mm-hmm. and it was going to be Oregon, then he ends up at Alabama. There's a lot there, and we'll see how he's going to be the guy at ASU or not. I just think they have a hard time. It's very challenging for them to deal with not being the guy because there's so much attention based on you and everybody is touting you. And it's rare when those kids handle it that well. I mean, I talked to two different kids this year who are five-star quarterbacks who are at other schools. One I knew pretty well, that's Kyle Allen, who's now at Houston, who, you know, he had a beard and kind of looked like he didn't look like he used to. He always looked like he was like 16 even when he was in college, and now he looks like he's been through a lot, and he has a really good perspective. The other one was Max Brown, who's now the starter at Pitt, who was the guy at USC, and then eventually he got overtaken by Darnold. And you can tell when they're, like, I had a great interview with Max Brown. I think he was very, very upfront, and he seemed like he was very blunt about it. I think you could tell the feelings were bruised some. But at the same point, I think, you know, he has nothing to be embarrassed about. I mean, there's nothing that's, you know, life's not supposed to be fair. I mean, the coach is there to try to do what is going to help the team win most. And I think for quarterbacks, they can look at it and say, you know, if this circumstance is this way, I'd still be the guy. And, you know, I think it's hard when that happens, at, you know, on such a big stage where everybody's watching and keeping score.
Yeah. I guess the one thing I see, and I saw with Alabama last year, and I guess this is speculation, but from the outside looking in, it certainly seems this way. Seems like some of these schools, especially ones that have at least two very good, highly touted quarterbacks, they're going to wait as long as they can to name a starter, maybe even into the season, into week one, two, or three, to try and keep these kids on campus so that they have a backup plan if that starter either sucks or gets injured. And it seems like that's obviously negatively affecting some of these kids who, because you know they're going to transfer. I mean, do you think that that is something, I don't want to call it an epidemic in college football, but is that a way of thinking that some of these coaches out there know that, hey, if I keep this quote-unquote quarterback battle going into the season opener and maybe in through September, I'm going to keep this kid around so at least I have a backup if something goes wrong?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's self-preservation. I'm sure that goes through some guys. I'm not saying it happened, you know, at Alabama with Nick Saban specifically, but I'm convinced that it's happened at enough places. I mean, you know, I asked Max Brown that question. Max Brown, he's a grad transfer. He could have left if if they'd named Sam Darnold the starter coming out of the spring. Max Brown could have left. He would have been eligible someplace else. There probably would have been, you know, a lot of interest in him because 6'4", and he's a former five-star quarterback, and he's a smart kid. He can pick up your system pretty quickly. There's that. I mean, I to a lesser degree, when I talked to Kyle Allen, he talked about thinking about loading up his curriculum just in case it didn't work out. But, you know, there was a report reported in USA Today that Lane Kiffin was going to be the head coach at Houston. And, you know, he wasn't sure how that was going to play out. You know, do I take a heavy course load time, maybe a little bit transfer out if this isn't going to work as a grad transfer? I think quarterbacks now are much more open to the idea of hitting the reset button, whether it's Russell Wilson at Wisconsin, or there's plenty of stories of guys, you know, because they see him on TV, everybody's on TV, you know, well, you can go beat Joe Flacco. I mean, if you have a strong arm, you beat Joe Flacco and drop down to Delaware and become an NFL high pick, if that's the case. I mean, there's plenty of examples of that. I think that's what college coaches are trying to combat it. We're trying to combat.
Bruce, I'm going to get you out of here really quickly. One last question. I wrote a story just the other day on College Football Country about Miami, and I read a quote actually coming out of Sports Illustrated from the anonymous scouting reports that you guys had on the top 25 teams, and whoever the anonymous coach was that spoke about Miami said, this could be their year, and I'm tired of hearing that this could be their year. I know we hear it so often. We've heard it with them over the course of the last decade. The fact of the matter is they've finished the season ranked twice in the last 12 or 13 years. They have a lot of talent on this team. I'm of the opinion that schools like Miami and USC specifically, schools that are in major metropolitan markets, glamorous cities that have lots of distractions, are only good, and I mean national championship good, when they have so much talent, NFL talent. I mean, when USC was rolling, they had, I mean, a dozen first, second, third round picks. Same thing with Miami during the Butch Davis, Larry Coker era, that they just so physically overwhelmed everybody that it didn't matter what they were doing Monday through Friday. You wrote the book on Miami as well. You went to Miami. I look at this Miami team in particular, and you can speak to the point as a whole as well, but I see a Miami team that's got a lot of young talent, but not a team that's going to overwhelm you. And if you look at history, USC and Miami both, they have a tendency to play really well, but there's a game or two down the line throughout the season where they are susceptible to a letdown, and that costs them from competing for national championships. What do you think?
I mean, maybe there's something there about the distractions. I mean, look, I think there's more distractions in this day and age than there were 10 years ago, because players are way more accessible because of social media, and they're more famous before they even get to college. You know, I don't look at this Miami team and think, like right now, we don't know who the quarterback is. You know, knowing somebody on their staff pretty well, he was telling me they're surprised that, you know, they have one great skill guy, potentially Amon Richards. They have a good running back, but It's like Miami doesn't have the skill talent that you would expect Miami to have. I do think that they're recruiting well. I think it has been Al Golden did not work out there, obviously. I think they struggled. We struggle recruiting, to be honest. I mean, they spent way too much time outside of Florida than they did inside of South Florida, where Sheldon Herter really built what Miami was about. And I think that Miami has, you know, like the reason why I think Miami gets the hype it does, like the way you're talking about, to some degree USC, and I think it's less of a USC issue, because they've been really good recently. Whereas Miami, you have to go back, and I think I was at the last kind of intriguing national game where Walter Payton's son ran over to Florida State in an Orange Bowl game. And that was like 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then it was all of a sudden they started backsliding off the radar. You know, I think when I look at them now, the talent level, I think they're definitely competitive. I mean, I think they have top 25 talent. I think the reason why there is such hype around Miami is because nobody has the NFL star power that Miami's had in the last 25 years. No one's won more national titles in that run. But I also think it speaks to, you know, Miami has a mystique about it, like in terms of people can, you know, show a picture of whatever they call that stadium, now Pro Player Stadium or whatever, Joe Robb Stadium or something like, you know, it's changed names so many times. They can show a picture of it at 11:50, you know, Eastern time on a Saturday morning and see 16,000 people there or whatever. But when Miami's good and they play a strong opponent, Miami rates on TV as well as anybody does. And there is an uproar there. And I think there's a lot of people, including non-Miami fans, we're waiting for Miami to be relevant again. And so I think they jumped the gun. I mean, I did a column at, I think think it was still when I was at ESPN, but it was probably towards the end of my time at ESPN. It was just basically like, I don't want to hear Miami's back or see these Miami's back columns until they win a national title. Because they were at such a, the bar was so high for them. They beat a top 25 opponent, or they beat a top 15 opponent, or like one Thursday night they kind of drove. I think it was Texas A&M, and they, you know, beat Ohio State one year. It's just like, one win is not showing Miami's back. You go in and, you know, you smack somebody in the national title game, and then Miami's back. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of Miami fans were not thrilled in that column. But it's, to me, that's the reality. That's what Miami was. I mean, the best team I've ever seen, and it's not even close in college football, was the Miami teams 16 years ago. And they were pretty awesome right after that, and they were loaded right before it. But it's been a long time. I don't see the talent. You know, they have three really good linebackers now. Their offensive line isn't anywhere near where it needs to be, I don't think. I mean, their defensive line has made a big step. I think that's the front seven, I think, is the area why people have gotten excited about Miami. Mm-hmm. Jenavon Richards is a stud receiver, but I just don't think there's quite yet enough pieces for people to kind of push that narrative out there.
Do you think Mark Richt is going to be the guy that brings them back? Not even a national championship. Did they even win an ACC title under Mark Richt?
I don't know. I mean, I was on record saying I thought it was a good hire. I think it was a great hire. It was a good hire by Blake James, because Mark Richt will get a lot of stuff done infrastructure-wise around the program. You know, look, I think he's done a really good job recruiting from, you know, everybody I've talked to. And I think he's made a lot of smart moves. But I wonder that the guy who was at Georgia did a really nice job at Georgia. But I just wonder if he kind of ran out of gas or what. You know, just I feel like you have to grind that much harder if you're at Miami, given where they were coming from. You know, after Al Golden and after the last decade, I just wasn't sold. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't. You know, I'm just not ready to jump in and say that. Although, you know, I do think by next year, the gap between them and the two best teams in the conference, I think will be narrowed considerably. I mean, I still think Florida State and Clemson have better talent than they do, but I think it's closer. I mean, I talked to one coach in the ACC last year who thought Miami is as talented as anybody they played in the ACC, and they have just seen them play Clemson. So it kind of shocked me to hear that, but you know, I think the gap has definitely been narrowing at least.
Miami's never been short on talent. Maybe it fluctuates year to year, but they've generally put out NFL guys every year. I think the eighth most NFL players from 2005 to 2015 of anybody in the country, more than Texas, more than a lot of other major schools. So Miami's always going to have talent. We'll see if they have a quarterback this season. I have my doubts whether Mark Richt, like you, is the guy to really push them back to where they want to be, but we'll see about that in the future. Bruce, I've kept you long enough. I'm going to let you go now. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Hopefully I have you on again sometime during the season, but I'm really glad you could be the first member of the media. You should be proud. You're the first non-Hokie to join the show. I think that deserves a very important distinction.
Well, that's cool for your Hokie fans. I literally get goosebumps every time I hear the first sounds of that song. I don't need to say what song it is. It's like literally from being in that stadium enough. And when I think of, like, literally when I tell people, somebody says, you know, what's a great venue to see college football? And I think of Lane Stadium because of the energy in there. It just feels like a college football game. So I'm excited for you to get this thing rolling, and I'm glad you asked me to be on it.
Absolutely. Can't wait to have you on again. So Bruce Feldman, Sports Illustrated writer, Fox Sports 1 sideline reporter. We'll have you on again soon. Thanks a lot, Bruce.
You got it.
All right, that was Bruce Feldman, college football writer, Sports Illustrated, Fox Sports 1, sideline reporter. Super excited to have him on the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And we're going to be back on Thursday with another special guest. Can't name it quite yet, but you guys stay tuned. In the meantime, go review the podcast on iTunes. Hottest Josh Rosen take of the week wins a free koozie. You know you want that koozie, so go review the podcast. Give it a 5-star rating. Really appreciate you guys listening, downloading. Keep subscribing. Visit the website, cfbcountry.com. My name is Josh Parcell. See you guys Thursday for episode 4 of the College Football Country Podcast. Have a good week.